This is Dr. Aaron Kuzel, and this is the Louisville Pre-Hospital Care Podcast. But let's talk about some pitfalls with the toxic patient. Nick, what type of things have you seen at U of L that could be potentially like pitfalls when dealing with the toxic patient?
Yeah, I kind of touched on it a minute ago, but I didn't really expand on it. But I think the most dangerous thing that we do in medicine is assuming someone's intoxicated.
Because, Nick, what does assuming mean?
It makes an ass out of you.
And me.
So, yeah, don't assume that your patient is intoxicated. I worked overnight mainly for 2 to 3-ish years. And I will say, like, the 3 a.m. person that comes in, is it drunk or is it a head bleed, is an impossible game. And I'm almost always wrong. And so is everybody in the room. I've seen people come in, you know, it's really difficult with the people that you pick up all the time that you've never seen not altered in their life. You know, they're altered every time you pick them up. So it's hard to see the forest from the trees. And I think, you know, having a healthy bit of humility there will help you. It will go a long way because, you know, we still have the same amount of frequent flyers that come in the hospital, and we, you know, their altered mental status might look like they're drunk, but they're not drunk. They're actually septic, or, you know, they're in acute heart failure, or they've got something else going on. So it's really hard to tell for me who is actually intoxicated. And then, you know, if we even talk about alcohol, like let's talk about ethanol, for instance, right? Mm-hmm. Now, if you get me to an alcohol level of 150, I'm going to be pretty lit like a Christmas tree. Now, some of these people, like, and you've taken care of them, they walk around at 300, which would be comatose for me. Right. And they'll have a conversation with you. And then they'll walk and they'll talk. And it's not obvious to me that they're drunk, but they're clearly, like, if you get a lab value on them, they're intoxicated. And it'd be something that would put all of us into a coma. So I don't think it's obvious to, you know, rule out or say, like, oh, this person's definitely drunk. Or, oh, this person definitely overdosed on opioids. That's why they're not breathing well. And, you know, you can Narcan people and stuff like that.
Now, the Narcan's just not working. I mean, we've put in 30 in there, and he's still not waking up.
That is the most common thing. Anytime I hear that story of I gave him Narcan, fire gave him Narcan, police gave him Narcan, and they got minimal response.
But he's an opiate overdose.
Right. And I'm like, you know, I don't know. I think this – he might use opioids, but that's irrelevant to this story at this point. You know, this is a person here. They might actually be sick, and we need to respect that.
Yeah.
I think is the important thing.
There's many times that you get this concern that you let them, oh, they're altered and they're drunk, and it's the same person we pick up on a certain street corner every single time, and they're drunk. It's a common thing among every hospital in the country.
Oh, yeah.
And you sit them down, and you're like, okay, the assumption or the leading diagnosis is alcohol intoxication. You go back, and now their pupils are blown. And you're like, oh, crap. What we miss on the alcohol intoxication is that he also fell, hit his head, and now he's got a subdural hematoma with midline shift.
Yeah, and we've let it expand.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Unfortunately. And that's an error. As sad as it is to say, it's something that does happen.
Yeah, and we could sit here and talk about, you know, the little boy that cried wolf. If you call 911 enough, you might not be taking this seriously. But, you know, that's impossible for me to sit here at this table in this nice warm room and tell you that. Like, you know, there might be a lot of things going on. They might actually be sick that one day. And it's never good when they're actually sick and it's something that kind of goes by the wayside. So always just assume your person is sick until they're not.
Even the patients who overuse the system, they eventually will get sick. They are human and they will eventually get sick.
Right. I mean, I unfortunately see it all the time. You know, they've been drunk for the past 10 years. They've been picked up every 3 days. But now, you know, 10 years has passed and they have real medical issues. And today is the day that they're going to manifest.
Yep.
So take that with a grain of salt. But, yeah, I think assuming that somebody has done something is the biggest pitfall that we have.
And the other thing with tox too is there are certain drugs that can make you hypoglycemic. Like I can think of the diabetic medications.
Oh God.
The
sulfonylureas
that will consistently drop your blood sugar. So yeah, you have a patient you gave Narcan, you gave some glucose to because their glucose was 60 and they got back up, then they went back down. Oh, it's not the opiate that's causing them to go back unresponsive. You give more Narcan, doesn't do anything. Check your glucose again,
right?
Because they've overdosed and intentionally trying to kill themselves with this sulfonylurea, and it's dropping their blood sugar. So there's multiple times, especially if you're coming from Bullock County and you got a 40-minute transport down to the hub, you know, you're going to be giving them a lot of glucose over that certain amount of time, just because it's going to drop. Or if you have a long acting insulin overdose that they've taken, that's another one that you're going to have to continually, frequently check their glucose. I know several times in a shift I have someone like that I have to have them on our POC glucose, because I know, they're 130 right now. I check the next hour and they're back to 20 and they're starting to get altered, because it's just how quickly that medication drops their sugar.
Right. Yeah. And then the constant reevaluation, I think, is a big thing. Like, you can come up on the scene and you come up with a plan and, you know, you figured out what's going on, but I think failure to reassess where you're at is also a pitfall that we do. Like, everybody wants to get the diagnosis and it feels good and you ride that high, like, oh, this is a tox patient, I found him, I stabilized him, and they're riding high. But in 15 minutes, these people can be right back down the dumpster too.
Yeah.
So
it all depends on the toxicology. Right. And sometimes, you know, sometimes you have undifferentiated tox, and that does make it a little bit more challenging, because you have several pills that they just put in their hands and shoved it in.
Right.
And those are equally challenging. And then you just basically, what we try to do in the emergencies department is figure out which is the longest acting one that we need to watch them for. Most of the time, those ended up going to the ICU, and they just kind of get watched every Q1 hour, vital signs to see where they're at and seeing exactly what they do manifest and treating as they manifest.
So going back to, like, you know, talking about Narcan too, one of the things, and we'll talk more about this and the opioid stuff, mm-hmm. I have crews that come in and they'll be like, well, he's mentally responsive to Narcan and then he went right back apneic, and I can almost guarantee you that you're not dealing with an opioid overdose at that point
most of the time.
So let me just paint a picture for you. Let me come up
maybe
to
except
you.
Xylazine.
Yeah. I mean, if they start going apneic again, like, you should have a pretty brisk response to the Narcan anyways.
Yeah.
But let me take an atomizer and let me shoot a mil of fluid up your nose. It's noxious. I've done it. Like, I teach people that it's a noxious stimuli. You're going to get a response from it. Like, you know, the person's going to, you know, nod their head and go, maybe, you know, and spit and do all of that kind of stuff. I think, like, the response that you get from that Narcan is really just a noxious stimuli. It's not a response to the Narcan. You probably get the same response if you took a saline flush and shot it up somebody's nose. Mm-hmm. So that's another one that I see common with that drug.
And GHB will get you every time, because as soon as you stimulate, that's a perfect example of that. They go 0 to 160 very quickly, where you will give them some stimulation, they'll fight you, and then they'll be back to snoring respirations requiring bivalve masking oxygen.
Yeah, I haven't had one of those patients in a while, but man, they are terrifying. Like, yeah, they'll be out of their mind, and then they just stop breathing. And really the only thing we can do in the hospital is, when they stop breathing, intubate them and try to sedate them so they can get through that point. But,
yeah, like, but as soon as you intubate them and then they wake up and they start fighting and trying to pull the tube, it's like a PCP and opiate mixed.
That was terrible. Yeah.
And you just go swing between both of them.
Yeah, but there's never any equilibrium. It's either one or the other.
It's not like speed or speed where they have where they have opiate and methamphetamine mixed.
Well, yeah.
But then you hit them with an Narcan and they immediately come out of it and they're full amphetamine.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Don't mix drugs.
Basically, back to what you were saying about the ICU, overcomplicating these patients, I think, is another pitfall. You can get so much information and it can become overwhelming. And, you know, if you have like a polypharmacy overdose where you have several things at play, in my mind, I can view all of those things separately and what they might do to the body, but putting them together becomes a real challenge. One of the pitfalls that we fall into is overcomplicating these patients. Really, just whatever the patient's giving you, treat that. We can do all this other stuff, but really just treat what that patient, or what you need of that patient, or whatever that patient's giving you. And that'll get them through this period. Remember, this is an acute period. Like, this isn't hopefully something that's going to be a sustained thing. You know, they're not going to be chronically overdosed the rest of their life. If you get them through this acute period, they will get better. So really, that's what we're doing. We're really just moving chess pieces around, treating what they give us. And that's like the basis of a lot of it, or toxicologic management. But I think, you know, we really can't overcomplicate these things, and it can get really sticky. So try not to do that with yourself.
This concludes part 3. Stick around for part 4, where we talk about gastric decontamination.